Hi there. Before we begin, let me explain something. This 12-part series was made at WYSO, a small public radio station in Southwest Ohio. We had financial support from Ohio Humanities, but we relied on WYSO's staff and infrastructure to get the job done. We'd be grateful if you could make a contribution at wyso.org. Thanks. Hi, I'm Nina Ellis, and this is a bonus episode of the Ohio Country Podcast from public radio station WYSO in Yellow Springs, Ohio.
And I'm Chris Welter. In the first 12 episodes of the Ohio Country, we heard a few times from Ohio Governor Mike DeWine and First Lady Fran DeWine. They spoke at the groundbreaking ceremony and the ribbon cutting for a new state park in Ohio called Great Council. The park is built near the site of an 18th century Shawnee village that was called Old Town or Old Chillicothe and includes a museum and interpretive center. Great Council was developed in consultation with the three federally recognized Shawnee tribes today. The idea for the state park came from the governor and first lady, who grew up in the area and wanted the park to be a place where Ohioans could learn more about the Shawnee.
In the last episode, we also heard from Glenna Wallace, chief of the Eastern Shawnee Tribe of Oklahoma, who spoke at the ribbon-cutting ceremony for Great Council State Park. Here's part of her speech near the end when she was giving gifts to the people who made the park a reality.
And then for Governor DeWine, it is sacred in our culture. The best way we can honor someone is with a Pendleton blanket. Governor, I have promised you a Pendleton blanket. I have told you you need to come to Oklahoma. This is the box that it comes in, but the blanket is not there. And from going through this museum, I learned something. When they removed the Shawnees, the federal government said they would pay for that removal as long as it did not cost more than $20 per head. We will help pay your transportation costs as long as it is not more than $20 per head. So we expect to see you in Oklahoma. Governor DeWine.
In Oklahoma. Yes.
Soon after we released that episode, First Lady Fran DeWine and Governor Mike DeWine visited Oklahoma, where they met with leaders from all three federally recognized Shawnee tribes, including Chief Wallace.
We contacted the First Lady and the Governor to ask if they would talk with us about their experience in Oklahoma and why they decided to build Great Council State Park in the first place. They said yes.
So today, for this bonus episode, you'll hear an edited version of that interview. Enjoy.
Good morning. I'm Nina Ellis. It's January 27th, 2025. We're at the studios here at WYSO in Yellow Springs, Ohio, joined by Governor DeWine and Mrs. DeWine. We're going to talk today a little bit about this incredible new chapter that's being written here in Ohio to engage people around the history and to bring forth in a more clear way the history of Ohio and its relationship with the indigenous people. So we want to just mention to you our podcast came out last July. It's 12 episodes. It's had more than 30,000 downloads so far. So we're really excited about the interest and really happy that you're here to give us your thoughts about what was going on when you started this project. Many years ago, I take it, right?
It's great to be with you. Thank you very much. Yeah. Fran and I, of course, grew up not too far from Old Town. We grew up here in Yellow Springs, and you know, we drove by that site for our entire life. And I think of, you know, it's always been part of our life. And when I became governor, we decided that that would be a great place to put a small state park and to try to tell the story of the Shawnee, and to try to tell the story also of other Native Americans here in Ohio. It's really so much of our history. It's so much of the Ohio story. And, you know, kids get a little smattering of it, maybe in fourth grade or Fran and I got a little bit in seventh grade, but that's usually about it for most Ohioans. And we thought it was time to tell the story.
There's a lot of story to tell, right? We've also realized that a lot of people don't know this history, and especially all the activity that's happening today to engage with the tribes. But tell us what your vision was for Great Council. What were you thinking of when you proposed this project?
Well, we wanted to just tell the story. This was a historic site. There's been, as you know, a motel there our entire lives. And, right behind the motel is where we believe, the historians believe, that the Shawnee tribe was there, maybe 1,200 people, particularly from 1777, 1778, 79. And a very crucial part of the Ohio story. It was really a time when the white settlers were coming out. They were sometimes living in peace with the Shawnee or the other Native Americans. They were trading things. Each culture was frankly influencing the other culture in an amazing way, with everything from clothes to housing, going back both ways. Sometimes there were violence, great violence, and atrocities committed on both sides, and just horrible, horrible things. But it was this great time of transition. And it's a story we thought that really needed to be told. And when you think about it, you study the Ohio history when you're a kid, and you're just kind of focused on that. But during this period of time, of course, was the American Revolution. So you have the American Revolution going on. You have what would be the United States in the future in a direct conflict with Great Britain. That spills out over into the frontier. This was, of course, the frontier. With different alliances, so it's a quite complicated story, and I don't, neither Fran nor I pretend to be historians, but when we put this together, what we wanted to do is to work with the Ohio History Connection. They were directly involved. The Ohio Department of Natural Resources is who actually did it and built this park, and now runs the state park with Mary Mertz heading that up. And we also, though, partnered with the three Shawnee tribes that are in Oklahoma and have gotten actually to know the leadership there. And we consulted with them and made them partners in this endeavor. The buck stops with us if something's wrong. We don't, but we wanted them to be real partners and just continue that relationship. The History Connection, it started a few years ago, a connection there. We also, of course, see the connection between the Miami tribe and Miami University. And that's goes back, Fran and I are both Miami University grads, and this goes back, frankly, to shortly after we graduated from there in the early 70s. There was this relationship that was established. And when we visited the Miami tribe in Oklahoma, it was clear that to us how closely they have been working with the university for many, many years, mm-hmm. which is a great thing.
50 years. Can you talk a little bit about the day of the grand opening in the summer of 24? It was a pretty exciting time, and I was very moved. It was very moving to me being an amateur historian, to see all the Shawnee that came to witness this historic event. Can you both talk a little bit about that, what that was like to see those people there?
It was a beautiful day, and we met many of the Shawnee, some of the Native Americans, during the UNESCO celebration, not very many months before mm-hmm. that. And so, we told them what we were doing and everything and invited them out. And so it was just fun to see Chief Glenna Wallace of the Eastern Shawnee and the other chiefs and so many people from all the tribes just come out. And, so powerful to hear Glenna Wallace said, when I think of my home, I think of Ohio. And, that's just a powerful, powerful statement. So it was exciting to be there with them and to show them their homeland again.
It felt like a reunion yes. to me. There was a lot of hugging and a lot of people high-fiving. And, at last the day has come when we're back in Ohio.
Yes.
It was a, I thought, very profound day for Ohio.
Well, it really was. You know, one tribe brought a whole bus out, and they made about a 3-day trip around Ohio. Fran was talking about UNESCO. Of course, that is the mounds that go back, you know, several thousand years. The earthworks that we see in a number of locations here in Ohio that were recognized by UNESCO as a World Heritage Site. And so they visited those mounds, and they believe that the people who built those were their ancestors as well.
Yeah. That day when Chief Wallace came to the microphone, after the kind of ceremony was over, she chided you a little bit and gave you an empty box. And she said, when you come to Oklahoma, I'm going to give you the blanket that should be in this box. And you went to Oklahoma a few months later.
We did. I had to get my blanket.
You had to.
Can you tell
us about that trip?
And, yeah.
You know, so, what did you learn? What surprised you on that trip?
Well, first of all, you know, we established the relationship with her, and this was... We'd seen her numerous times and had conversations with us, and of course she kept inviting us to Oklahoma, and we, you know, kept saying we were going, and we had not gone yet. So this was her, I think, final attempt.
It worked.
Hey, you need to come out, and you know, we were able to do that, and it was, I think, very, very interesting for us, very exciting to see what the tribes are today, how they interact with the tribal members, learn a little bit about the law in that particular area, and visited one of the centers out there, cultural centers, and actually visited with all three of the Shawnee tribes, and then visited, of course, with the Miami tribe as well. Talked to the chiefs and just got an understanding of what they currently are doing and what they do for their members. And I think it was, you know, it was sort of for us, it was kind of the completion of this relationship. You know, we needed to go out there. We needed to kind of see where they were today. We needed to feel where they ended up, because they had different journeys. They were forced out of Ohio. Some of them did not go directly to Oklahoma, but over the years they ended up then in what was called Indian Territory and what became, of course, Oklahoma, state of Oklahoma.
So I've gone down there twice to northeastern Oklahoma to report on this podcast. And one of the things that struck me, and I'm not sure if you two saw this at Indigo Sky, the Eastern Shawnee Casino, was all of the artwork and references to Southwest Ohio down there. It was interesting for me also growing up here to see, pictures depicting Old Town, right? Depicting Simon Kenton running the gauntlet, you know, in this very different place, right? Oklahoma's a different environment. But it would, to me at least, it became, after I visited Oklahoma, so clear how important, Southwest Ohio is to, you know, not only the Shawnee, but also the Miami and some of the other tribes that are in that area. So I guess that was kind of my question. Did it strike you at all seeing all these names, you know, seeing things named after Tecumseh, in this totally different environment, right? It was almost like you were in Ohio, but you were in a different place.
Well, first of all, you get your map out and look at Oklahoma, and you see what we consider to be Ohio names all through it. And, pronunciation might be a little different. We went into what we would call Miami, Oklahoma, M-I-A-M-I, and the folks there very quickly told us that we were mispronouncing it. It was Miami, and so that was our first lesson. But yes, you know, some of the pictures that we saw in the casino displayed very prominently. Some of them were by Doug Hall, who we've gotten to know. Doug, not a Shawnee, has become a great painter of that period of time, and we actually visited him as well. He lives in Missouri, but he's right across, literally across the line from Oklahoma, and a good friend of Chief Glenna Wallace. And if you go to the Great Council State Park, you'll see he's allowed us to replicate a number of his paintings there as well. But yes, going to Oklahoma and seeing all the references to Ohio was, it was great. It was great. It just showed you that, you know, how closely we are tied with them, and how they still, you know, several hundred years later, still consider that, understand that close tie.
You know, so many people came here, as you mentioned, a whole busload of people came from Oklahoma to the opening of Great Council. And I know that Chief Wallace has been very outspoken about her desire for tribal members to come to visit Ohio. Did that visit out there give you any ideas for how to sort of support that back and forth? Maybe more Ohioans could go to visit Oklahoma to further their understanding, too.
No, absolutely. And I think this is not just a one-shot, one-time deal. We believe that this museum, really a big visitor center, is going to continue to be able to tell the story. And that story will be a continuing story. For example, if you go to the first floor, the basement floor of the museum, our goal is to use that as a continuing, we'll continue to turn that over, but the focus right now is on a lot of the work of the current Shawnee in Oklahoma, some of the artwork, some of the other pictures, some of the other things, to continue to tell their story. So we're here in Ohio telling their story in Oklahoma, where they're out there, of course, with paintings, as you said, really telling the story of Ohio. So it's that connection. And we just need to build that over a period of time. Miami University has done a good job in building that over a period of time. They continue to build it. It's always a work in progress. And I think, again, our goal is to try to expand knowledge about the Ohio story. This is an essential part of the Ohio story. These are the first Ohioans. These are the first people who were here. And one of the other things that we're trying to do is to Ohio history is today taught in fourth grade here in Ohio, and we are working now. And in fact, in the budget I'm presenting to the legislature shortly, there'll be some additional money to develop a very good Ohio history curriculum. That teachers will be able to directly pull from and make it easier for them. And certainly an essential part of that curriculum will be about the Native Americans here.
I want to ask you also about, there are some displays that Chris reported on in Oklahoma where they have this river trail. You want to talk about that, describe that river trail. Did you get to see that river trail?
The splash pad that's at the Eastern Shawnee.
Yes, we did. Yeah, we did. Yeah.
That was also really striking to me, right? That they had invested so much time and money into this thing that was meant for kind of their youngest citizens.
Yes, yes.
And the references to Ohio, but also the fact that it referenced the removals, but it kind of did it in a way that talked about sort of the resilience of the tribe, right? That they had to walk this amount of miles to get from where they were in Ohio to Oklahoma. I thought that was really powerful.
Yeah, that was actually quite moving when you stopped and understood what they were actually depicting there, and that long walk, that long movement, forced movement out of Ohio and eventually, of course, to Oklahoma.
Governor, I'd like to ask you, do you remember when you learned that people walked, were forcibly removed from Ohio? I'm going to tell you, I grew up in Indiana, Northwest Indiana. We had removals there. I went all through school in Indiana, and I never heard the word removals. I lived in a place where there were, much like both of you, where there had been tribes living on a riverbank. And I never knew that until I came to Ohio and read about the removals here. So it's a kind of a missing chapter in the public knowledge. Can you talk about that a little bit? When did you learn about the removals?
Well, I think I learned about it from a more macro point of view, that there were part of American history. You read the Jackson period of time, and you read about the Trail of Tears out there. But did I connect that with Ohio? I'm not sure I did. This was just sort of the Indian, wherever they were, the removal. And I didn't, directly link that to where I live. And it wasn't until much later that I finally did.
Do you remember when it was?
No, not really. I think I don't remember. But it was certainly not initially and certainly not in school.
Yeah. What about you, Mrs. DeWine? Do you remember when you learned about the removals?
No, and it was never spoken as a removal.
Yeah.
We knew that there had been Native Americans here, and now they weren't, then the pioneers came in and
somehow disappeared. Yeah, yes. They left.
Yeah.
Or whatever the euphemism was, right? It was actually a very violent and tragic history.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering also, and I'll go on to other things, but it's, to be honest, when I learned about the removals, that's when I agreed to work on this project, because I thought, this is something that's missing from our conversations, right? Why is it so hard for us to talk about removals publicly? The Chief Wallace acknowledged in an interview with me after the ceremony at Great Council that you never used the word removals. She stood up and used that word in front of those 1,000 people who were there. Why is it so hard, perhaps, for you as governor to use that word and talk about that publicly?
Well, I may not have talked about that day, but I certainly have talked about it. I talked about it publicly in other interviews and explanations of the of the museum and why we want to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this is a question always of how we teach history. Mm-hmm. And, being candid about what happened, I think we're more likely, frankly, today to be more totally candid and totally look at things not just from the perspective of the white settlers, which we probably mostly did when I was growing up, but also look at it from the point of view of the Native Americans. And I think that, I wanted to be a history teacher, a high school history teacher, actually, when Fran and I got married. She was going to be a home ec teacher, and I was going to be a social studies teacher, and that's what our majors were. And it sort of didn't work out very well, but went down some other pathways. But
yeah, what went wrong?
I often ask about that. Think about that. Life would have been a little different. I actually did student teach, but never taught. Went on to law school, but. I think we do a better job today, but it's something that we have to continue to work on. Look, what we want our young people to do is to be critical thinkers. And, we don't want to give them any whitewashed version of history. We don't want to, I think what I've told the History Connection is they are helping us with a curriculum is that I think this is the story of the Native Americans and the white settlers. It gives us a great opportunity to look at how different people look at different points of history and the different perspective. From the white settlers, this was land out there. They wanted to farm. It wasn't, they wanted to do everything that the Europeans were doing. European settlers were coming in and they looked at it as just a great opportunity for freedom and to develop in their families. Native Americans, obviously this was their home. So they both had perspectives that I think a student could understand. And being able to put yourself in the position of someone else is one of the things in life that is very, very important to be able to do and to see how they look at things. And I think this is just a great teaching opportunity. You can cast blame wherever you want to, but just tell the story. Everybody can figure it out themselves, and each side has a story. We should teach both of those.
And one thing that, I think both Nina and I noticed when we went through the exhibits, and specifically the exhibit about removals, and we mentioned this in the podcast as well, was that in the state of Ohio, all of the representatives, the the congressmen who were in districts that had reservation land, so who were essentially, you know, in a way representing Native Americans, they voted against the removals. Yeah. And outside of, you know, there was a strong contingent of kind of very Jacksonian politicians in the Cincinnati area who voted for it. But I guess that was one thing that Chief Glenna said to us, that she actually didn't know that until she saw that exhibit. And I think that kind of changed her perspective. So it is nuanced, right?
Right. It's nuanced. And you know, my understanding is the then governor was against it as well. So you had a significant number of white people here who were not in favor of that. You know, we Fran and I grew up with the Walt Disney stories of Davy Crockett, but you know, one of the stories that was that we now know was true that they depicted in the Davy Crockett Disney movie was that Crockett was against Jackson on this. And when we look at the history, there's some great quotes. We have a quote from Crockett in the museum talking about that this was not right. So here's someone who we portray at least as a great Indian fighter, but he said, "Hey, this is not right." So again, just knowing that at that period of time, it wasn't everybody said, "Oh, Jackson's right. We got to do this." There was opposition to this, and that's again something that people need to know.
It's an interesting point in time when we have both the World Heritage Sites and Great Council opening within, you know, coming to public fruition within a year of each other. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the World Heritage Sites? I know Mound Builders Country Club just opened to the public this January.
Stopped being a country club
this month, right?
Now a place where people will
it's
be able
amazing.
To go,
it
you
took
know,
a long time,
all
though. It took a long time.
Well, yeah, these things take time. And you have to have the will to go do it.
Mm-hmm.
What we're now looking at and the budget we're presenting is giving the History Connection some of the finances that they need to develop those sites in the sense of how you show those sites.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there needs to be interpretive centers, because when you walk up, sometimes people will, I don't know, not be as impressed or not think that dirt that has been moved in these amazing ways is such great quantity, and some of the things coming from, you know, all across what we now call the United States, it may not understand the importance or the significance of it, but having a way to interpret it, interpretive centers. So we're really focusing on that. We know that once a site is declared, we have sites in Ohio, a World Heritage Site or sites, that the world starts coming. And it usually takes a couple of years, but people plan their trips and they start coming. So we're going to see more and more tourists who are coming to Ohio. That's good for our economy, but it's also, again, something we're very, very proud of. And it's part of, again, part of the Ohio story.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that Glenna Wallace said at the opening of the UNESCO sites that's stuck with me is, you know, all of our lives we've been told that we're savages, and now we find we are geniuses. I think that's so powerful.
Yeah. Can I ask you, your family settled within a few miles of that place. As a young person, as a child maybe, did you walk along the river? Did you know those stories of the early people that lived there? And how did that inform your life?
Being
on that land.
Yes.
There.
What we knew always that we always talked about Tecumseh. And, you know, we have, you know, Tecumseh schools and, you know, this word Tecumseh, Simon Kenton, all these names are used in this area for so many things. At my uncle's farm, at my great uncle's farm, and the farm where my mother was born, you know, we found arrowheads all the time. You know, I mean, that was just sort of a fun thing. And my uncle collected some of the arrowheads. You know, he had quite a collection of them. And the Little Miami our farm went right down to the Little Miami. So we always knew about the Little Miami. We always knew that there were Native Americans there. I don't think that we ever connected any more than, this is really cool. A long time ago, there were Native Americans here, you know. But it was always part of who we were. We knew that the Native Americans hunted on this ground, and it was a very nice place.
I have a question about, you know, when you were in Oklahoma, interestingly, coincidentally, President Biden made a public apology about the boarding school situation in the United States, which, you know, a few months before he left office. And I'm just wondering if, what does it, have you ever considered an apology along those lines for what happened in Ohio, and would it do any good? Do you think about that?
Well, I think the boarding school story is a story that is now starting to be told. Mm-hmm. It's done in more popular culture. You know, we saw part of that story told on the 1923 Netflix, you know, I guess it was Netflix, but, you know, version of the spinoff from, I can't think of the name of it. Anyway.
It's a Yellowstone?
Yellowstone, yeah, it was a spinoff. It was a prequel. Yeah. It was a prequel to Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. And they went into it in graphic detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was shocking.
It was just, it was like, oh my God, mm-hmm. this is horrible, you know. So I think you're seeing that portrayed more. And I think that, again, is a story that had not sunk in, at least, for most Americans. And, you know, again, you know, as we look at what happened, you know, trying to figure out exactly what happened in Ohio. So whether or not there should be an apology or not, it's certainly, you know, again, something that should not have happened the way it happened. And it's something that we're not, you know, we should not be very proud of.
We've covered a lot of territory. We're so grateful to you for spending so much time with us. Is there anything you would like to say? At the, you know, we're hoping to air this as episode 13 as part of our podcast.
Well, I would just invite people, wherever they hear this, to come to Ohio and come see the Great Council State Park. It's near Xenia, Ohio, between Xenia and Yellow Springs on Route 68. It used to be an old Indian path that went, I guess, from the Ohio River to Detroit, Michigan. And there's a lot of history here. There's a lot to see. Come also not only to see Great Council, but you can see all the earthworks, the new UNESCO sites, and you can find those up on the History Connection website. Those are available, and you know, you could spend a 2 or 3 days here in Ohio. You could go down to Serpent Mound, and one of the more spectacular things that has been left by our Native Americans, where you can climb up on a tower that we're really actually redoing right now, and look down and see this serpent in the ground, and it is actually stunning, and you get a real feel for the history and what people sometimes were doing 2,000 years ago.
The Ohio Country was created at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at public radio station WYSO in Yellow Springs, Ohio. It was made possible through a partnership with Ohio Humanities, a nonprofit that shares stories to spark conversations and inspire ideas, and by the National Endowment for the Humanities, a More Perfect Union initiative. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of Ohio Humanities or the National Endowment for the Humanities.
The editor of the Ohio Country is Samantha Summer, and the cultural editor is John Bickers from Case Western Reserve University, a member of the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma. The digital producer is Mary Evans. She's the producer of Reentry Stories and other projects on WYSO.
Flawn Williams was the sound mixer. Layla Troyer created the logo. She's a member of the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma, too, and a graduate of Miami University. Music for the series was composed by Evan Miller. He's the WYSO and Novaphonic FM assistant music director and host of WYSO's Midday Music and The Outside.
And finally, we'd like to thank all the tribal citizens and their sovereign governments for sharing their time, resources, their knowledge, and their stories with us for this podcast. And also a special thanks to WYSO General Manager Luke Dennis for his support. Hello again. Now that you've heard this episode, let me explain again. This 12-part series was made at a small public radio station in Southwest Ohio called WYSO. We had financial support from Ohio Humanities, but we relied on WYSO staff and infrastructure to get the job done. So we'd be grateful if you could make a contribution at wyso.org.